So now we're up to 32. Going down the page. There we are. Now we're starting on it. This is the Revenue Act of 32. Now, because of the Great Depression, you know, where they had been passing virtually every 2 years, you know, they skipped 1930. And I consider, because of the forthcoming bust, you know, for whatever reason, there's 4 years that go by instead of two. But in 1932, they come out with the Revenue Act of 1832. So Joe, let's go on down through here. You know, you can see now they have the, you know, the table of contents, so to speak, at the front end of it. Here's section four, noting the special classes of taxpayers. Keep on going down, Joe. So here's section 11. Oh, there's nothing about in lieu of. Wow. So if you're just looking at this first time and didn't look at the whole thing, you're just looking at the important features, you would have no idea that this law was really connected to the laws of the past. So Joe, let's move to section 63. So in 1932, you still had a section 63. Oh, the taxes imposed by this title shall be in lieu of the corresponding taxes imposed by the sections of the Revenue Act of 1928, bearing the same numbers. Oh, so the tax imposed today in this act was in lieu of the tax imposed in 1928. And 28 was in lieu of 26, 26 was in lieu of 24, 24 was in lieu of 21, 21 was in lieu of 18, 18 was in lieu of 16 and 17. So let's move on. Next page. Oh, now we're up to 34. And it's the same thing again, but 34. Again, you know, they have this detailed table of contents, something new, you know, something they didn't have in the past. They started in 1928. And so here they got the table of contents, the sections listed. Let's go on down, Joe. Let's go down to section 11. You got your special classes of taxpayers. You got your section 11. There should be levied, collected. Well, you can't say that this is in lieu of. Oh, yes, you can. You got to know the inherent features of this act. So Joe, let's move to the next page. Now we're moving on to section 63. Oh, the taxes imposed by this title shall be in lieu of the corresponding taxes imposed by the Revenue Act of 1932. So 34 was in lieu of 32. 32 was in lieu of 28. 28 was in lieu of 26. 26 was in lieu of 24. 24 was in lieu of 21. 21 was in lieu of 1918, which was in lieu of 16 and 17. It's all interrelated. It's connected. Okay, Joe, let's move on to 36. 36. Now it's going to be the same thing. Let's just kind of quickly move through it, go down the page. Here you go. There's the beginning of it. You got the table of contents, section numbers, listing of all the sections. I didn't stick them into this presentation. You still have a special classes of taxpayers. And you got section 11, which doesn't say anything about in lieu of, because in lieu of was stuck over in section 63. Section 11, that imposed the tax. Here in 1936, section 63, all the taxes imposed by this title shall be in lieu of the taxes imposed in the Revenue Act of 1934. Okay, Joe, move on. 38, okay. Now, in 1938, they had been doing what they've been doing for years, just 150 years, ever since Congress had been meeting. They just passed one act dealing with one tax. And all these taxes are scattered all over the United States statutes of large. They're just everywhere. You know, you had estate and gift taxes and taxes on booze, taxes on cigarettes, taxes on firearms, taxes on incomes, taxes on, you know, for a wide variety of matters, tires, chassis, car chassis, you know, just taxes on admissions and dues, you know, to move, go into a movie theater. You know, there are all sorts of taxes. But here's the last time, really, that they have a separate independent tax act. And it's called the Revenue Act of 1938. And again, it lists the table of contents. It has a table of contents, the listing of all the sections, just like the prior acts. You know, you can, if you want to, you can get the old tax acts, look at them. Hey, they're all the same through this time period. So section four, it still lists special classes of taxpayers. And I was, oh, there's section 11. Doesn't say anything about in lieu of, oh, but section 63, next page, Joe, does. Taxes imposed by this title shall be in lieu of the taxes imposed by the Revenue Act of 1936. So 38 was in lieu of 36. 36 was in lieu of 34. 34 was in lieu of 32. 32 was in lieu of 28. 28 was in lieu of 26. 26 was in lieu of 24. 24 was in lieu of 21. 21 was in lieu of 1918. And that was imposed in lieu of the taxes imposed in 1916 and 1970. It's all interrelated because it's in lieu of. Okay, Charles is asking, I didn't see that joke. What was it? Hey, Charles.
Charles is, he's unmuted.
It's addressed to everybody. I'm just asking, you say that everything's interconnected, but doesn't in lieu of mean in place of? And doesn't that suggest that one takes the place of the other, and so all connections are severed?
No, Joe, when you have something like this, a series of things, you're not really replacing it. But, you know, even if you can, even if you think in terms of it being a replacement, it has no distinction. Because if you're replacing it, how does that make a difference?
Well, I'm just asking. You keep saying they're interconnected, but
they are. They're, if you don't know this history, you don't know of what, you know. This is in lieu of what? Well, in lieu of what? And you got to go back. Well, I want to see what it was in lieu of, and then that was in lieu of. So it's all interconnected.
It's historically connected, but it's not. But basically, you can read if you could travel in time back to 1937. You would only read the 1936 Act, right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't do you
any good. But since it's in lieu of, you know, you're thinking those terms, Charles. But to me, in lieu of means something more, because once you see what's gone on with these various acts, maybe it'll clear up when we're getting ready to get into it. And you know, I mentioned when we started off tonight, well, gee, there's some of this stuff that's still, I contend it remains unrepealed today. So what do you do about that, Charles?
Well, I mean, if it says it's in lieu of, it means everything else was repealed. I mean, if I sit in your chair, you're not there anymore. I hope. I mean, it'd be
that awkward. Is true. But if you ignore the history, what is in lieu of? You can't. There's things you cannot. You know, with these little changes, you can see how they're building this thing to make it appear to be broader than it really is.
Because then,
if you don't know the history, Charles, you can't see this interconnectedness.
Because the 1913 Act, they were explicit in repealing it, but then
they even had repeal provisions. Well, I don't want to get into the repeal provisions because it's meaningless for our purposes, because you need to know, because the pattern that was set in 1916, the pattern that existed in 1918, is still the pattern today. And to me, it's a whole lot easier, particularly, pick the Revenue Act of 1921. It's a whole lot easier to understand that than the thousands of pages we have today. And then you can understand that, hey, it's all remains the same, and there's a pattern there. And once you see the pattern, then you can see the pattern as it continues, Charles. And that's the reason why the history is so important.
What is the information we're supposed to derive from the pattern?
Well, we're going to get into one thing tonight.
Okay.
Just one thing.
Would
let me add something here too, Charles. as Larry pointed out in the beginning, between 1913 and 1916, there wasn't any in lieu of there. The entire act was repealed, not just the taxes imposed. Here specifically, when you're talking about the in lieu of, they're talking about the in lieu of the taxes imposed. They're not talking about the application of the code, who it pertains to, or how it pertains. They're just talking about the specific tax. You say, well, if you're sitting in a chair and I replace you, I'm in lieu of you, then I've replaced you. You're right, Charles, but you haven't replaced the chair, that which holds you.
Yeah, that's a good explanation, Sean. Hey, let's move on. You know, it's approaching 9 o'clock, and we got some substantive things to cover. So we're up with the Revenue Act of 1938. So let's go into the 1939 Code. Here we go. Now, all the way up until the 1870s, you know, states, you hear in Alabama, we had an Alabama code back in 1840. But we didn't have a United States code until 1873, so to speak. You know, the first time that Congress codified, you know, created a code for federal law was in 1873. You know, they passed a law, I think it was in 1869. Like the states are doing, let's just take the currently existing laws and throw out the repealed stuff. And then whatever's existing, let's organize it into categories, titles. And so the first time that was done with the Revised Statutes of 1873, the first federal code. Then by 1926, you're up to 43, 44, 45 volumes of United States statutes large. So in 1926, they decided to come out with a current code that we have today. They created the 50 titles. Of course, we've got up to about 53 today. But the second codification effort happened in 1926. However, that codification that happened, which is what we have today, the United States Code, it was created in 1926, had 50 titles in, and we got 53 today. But you know, Congress said, well, you know, that is the code is just prima facie evidence of the law. You know, the underlying laws are really what's come from. So if you have a conflict between the code, you go back to the old stuff to determine really what it means. Now, once you understand, over my website, I've got an explanation for the federal United States Code. You know, it lays out this history. And, you know, here we're dealing with this codification effort in 1926. So here you have the same effort going on in 1939. Of course, they studied it throughout the whole 1930s. You know, there was a committee, the Attorney General and committees of Congress, hey, let's codify the laws. So he had all these tax laws scattered all over the place. And so they said, hey, look, let's stick them all in one volume and repeal everything that's stuck into that code. And so that's what they did in 1939. They created an Internal Revenue Code. It was just going to codify just simply the tax acts. So that means that the 1938 income tax would be going into the 39 code. And indeed, that was the case. Now, Joe, let's look at some specific provisions. Okay, here. Now you have the table of contents right here. And remember, you know, you look at this chapter one income tax. Let's go down to section 63, Joe. Subchapter C, you have these supplemental provisions. But then here, you know, these supplements, you know, this is what I want people to understand. And, you know, this started in 1928, you know, states and trusts, you know, the format sections 11 through section 63, that's the schematic. And if you have something dealing with a part of states and trusts, you know, you understand these codes, the sections right here, and then you will stick whatever this dictates right here under supplement E, you will, for a states and trust, then you will go to the schematic that's set forth in sections 11 through section 63, you know, the roadmap, so to speak. And so partnerships are treated the same way. Insurance companies are treated the same way. Joe, let's go down to the next page. Non-resident aliens, foreign corporations, possessions of the United States. Oh, those are real important. And I'm not going to say anything more about it. Foreign personal holding companies. But these supplements, you see how each supplement works. And then once you understand the format for that supplement, for that subject, then you plug it into the general schematic set forth in Section 11 through Section 63. So here you have Section 11. Section 11, this came from the 1938 Act. Now let's go down to, they've been sticking, Section 63, the in lieu of feature, well, it's not there. The 38 Act was supposed to go under the 39 Code, but now we got something different. The in lieu of feature, hey, look, if the 39 Code repealed, if it was contained in the 39 Code, it was in a prior law, it's repealed. Oh, but if it wasn't in the 39 Code, does that mean it still exists today in effect? I maintain that that's the case. Now, Joe, let's go down. there is a set of books. And if you get Joe's CD, I have this thing on the screen right here. This is just a couple of pages, but I think it's about 200 or 300 pages long. But it tells you about the derivations of the code for the 39 Code and the 54 Code. So if you want to look something up, well, where'd this section come from? So let's go on down through here. Let's see. Okay, here, this is a table we're showing the 39 Code sections and where what was their derivation. So let's go down. We're wondering about Section 63 because there was a Section 63 in the 38 Act that was the in lieu of feature, but it doesn't show up in the 39 Code. And now you look at what's the derivation for what we just saw in Section 63, which is something different. Oh, it comes from, Joe, go down here to Section 63 in yellow. Oh, it comes from a law enacted by Congress on February 26, 1926, 44 stats, page 52. Oh, let's look that up. So Joe, I think it's the next page. Okay. Now I'll put it further down. We'll come back to this page. Here it is. This is the 1926 code. This is that 1926. Oh, this section 258. They pulled this out of this 1926 act. And this became section 63. Why is that? Section 63 of the 38 act didn't go into the 39 code. They're supposed to codify it. Oh, but they didn't do that. They stuck this something about statistics, publication of statistics in this section 258 from a 1926 act. This section 258 gets pulled out of this act and codified over into section 63 of the 39 code. And section 63 of the Revenue Act of 1938 went nowhere. We just saw the parallel references up there. Section 63 didn't go into section anywhere in the 39 code. So Joe, let's go back up. Section 4. Now we did. Okay. Now we see that section 63 came from some other place. Now Joe, let's go down through here. Now. And this is where I think we're on. I can't see the page numbers here, but I think we're the next to last. Yeah, 38. This is page 38. Section 4 was the in lieu of feature. I mean, with special classes of taxpayer. The 39 code. Now, this cross-reference table shows you where the sections in the 39 code, where they went in the 54 code. So all the way up until August of 1954, there was the 39 code. There was section 4 in the 39 code, which was the special classes of taxpayers. And that was citizens abroad and in the insular possessions, non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Ooh, And, you know, man, Section 4 listed some very specific things. So Section 4 of the 39 Code was not stuck over in any place in the 54 Code. Isn't that interesting? So that is my presentation for tonight. And the point I want to make is this. The 1986, the current code that we got, this incredibly complex, being amended by Congress all the time. In 1986, then in effect, well, in 1985, the 1954 code, the 1985 version was in effect. So in 1986, all Congress did is they said, oh, well, let's rename the 54 code. The 54 code is hereby renamed the 1986 code. And so we got the 1986 code today. It says the 1986 code as amended through 2022. But, you know, there's, I wonder, Section 4 of the 39 code went nowhere. Does that mean it still exists today? And what's the effect of that? What's the effect of that, Charles? You know, in lieu of. In light of your in lieu of argument,
I'm trying to figure out if any court has ever.
This stuff has never been raised, Charles. And the reason why is nobody digs into the current. My roommate in law school was Joe Rich, and he went to NYU Tax School after we got out of law school, and he came back to Huntsville. He's a big, prominent tax lawyer. And, you know, guy I went to church with, Steve Wilson, big tax lawyer. We've known each other since I was 5 years old. You know, they're big tax lawyers here in town. They don't get into this stuff.
Okay, but a lot of people get into statutory interpretation and construction and the significance of legislative history. Has anybody tried to find out what Congress meant by this phrase in lieu of? I'm looking at a process failure theory of statutory interpretation from William and Mary Law Review, November 2014. And it seems like the legislative history ought to address this. And I'm trying to find, Stephen Breyer even wrote about this at one point. And has anybody tried to figure out what this phrase in lieu of means?
Well, I've looked into it. Now, the case law doesn't seem to come up with any satisfactory solution, because really the only time it shows up is in something like this. And
what is Congress doing, I guess, is the big
when they
amend a statute, when they enact a new tax code, do they intend that to be the entire law, or do they intend it to somehow be
Well, they know, you know, in August of 1954, here's what they did with the 39 code. Take the 39 code the way it looked like in 1954, which means it includes all the amendments to the various sections of the 39 code all the way up through August of 1954. Now, imagine what it looks like in August of 1954. Now take some scissors. You're going to cut out each page. And then you're going to cut out each section. Each section is going to be different. And you're going to take some of these sections, like one section, section 143, which deals with withholding on non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Hey, just that one section alone is going to become a whole chapter. All they take is section 143 and bust it up into 20 different sections. And, you know, that begins subtitle E. That becomes a subtitle in the 54 code. So what they did, imagine cutting up the 39 code into sections, cutting up some of the sections, you know, creating subdivisions. And now you have basically a deck of cards. Now shuffle that deck of cards and change some words.
Okay, change some words. Have you ever gone back to the Congressional Record, or I forget what it was called before the Congressional Record? There was a version of the debates. I mean, when they're doing this, they're supposed to keep records of it all.
And that's useless as well as the committee reports.
Okay, and I mean, there's U-SCAN. I'm looking at another. I just did a search on in the legislative history meaning of the phrase in lieu of when amending a statute, and looking at everything I get when I do that, and theme and variation in statutory preclusions against successful successive enforcement actions. Statutory preclusions on enforcement.
Well, hey, Charles, you know, we're almost to the end of the program tonight. I don't think if you want to debate and talk about in lieu of a feature, you know, but that isn't the only thing. You just need to know it's interrelated. And whatever the tax was in 1938, in 1936, it was still the same tax in 1938. And in 1938, when they stuck that over the 1939 code, it was still the same. Oh, but they're making these, there's these subtle little things that they do.
And just you know, Larry, if I can for a minute, you know, Charles, you're right about the in lieu thing because it hasn't been litigated a whole lot. But you know what I find really interesting about this is Larry points out 1913 Act to the 1916 Act, they didn't in lieu of anything. They repealed the whole damn thing and replaced it with 1916. After that, what they did is they started, according to what I'm reading, is they started reimposing the tax by saying in lieu of the taxes imposed in 1916, now they're 1918. I don't see anything in there repealing the entire tax code, how it's applied, who's it applied to, where it's applied. It's simply re-establishing or redesigning.
The same tax continues. Now, if you want to, Charles, you know, I guarantee you that tonight is probably the first night you've ever been exposed to any of this tax stuff. And so I dare say, and I'm going to call it like it is, I think you're a novice in this area. But, you know,
I'm not a novice at legislative history. And I mean,
well, I know, but you're a novice in reference to the Internal Revenue Code. And let me just tell you, there's some mind games they play.
Okay, well, what's the purpose of those games?
Well, I think the tax is far smaller than it really is, than it appears to be, and it's perfectly constitutional the way it is, the way it really is, but the way it really is painted to appear to be bigger than it really is.
And they did, it was, and the timing of it was such that they repealed the 1913 Act, which was more, where the boundaries were much wider, embracing, you know, domestics. And then right after the DeBruyshaver case, all of a sudden they got a new deck of cards. And then they add to the deck from 16 on, but they don't repeal anything. They just say, in addition to, on top of, reestablishing, you know, I mean, words that seems to me what in lieu of is driving at.
Well, there are repeal provisions, but we're not talking about that. You know, the point I want to make is there is an interrelationship between all this stuff. And you can see there's a pattern that it gets established in 1916. It becomes a little clearer by the 1921. So 1921 through 26, you have somewhat greater clarity. But then starting with the Revenue Act of 1928, oh, now you got the 39 code format. And, you know, if you really understand how it operates, there is a pattern there. And it's this pattern that remains constant. And what I'm trying to do is to tell people it's a lot easier to understand. There's a pattern that you can see inside the Internal Revenue Code. And the way you see it is by going back and studying how that code was built.
Right. And Charles, in response to one of your questions, is there something nefarious about what they're doing? Oh, you better believe there's something nefarious about what they're doing. And as you examine the codes and as you examine the language they use in the codes as the code sections advance from generation to generation, the language gets a lot more vague. And all of a sudden, people are looking at a term such as individual. They look at an individual and they say, wow, that means every living, breathing thing on the earth. Well, as you know, Charles, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking for some authority. Basically, the basic point that Larry seems to be making is, in lieu of means something less than repeal.
Right? Well, you know, and that's
In that one code section where it's used, it's in lieu of the previous tax.
Okay, but
so that whatever the tax scheme was in the prior one is continued forward in the same pattern.
Okay, and
that's what it means.
And yet, what when you in lieu of, how broad is that phrase? I mean, how would you know what's in what's repeated?
Well, hey, Charles, you know, I've dug into this. If you want to do a brief on it, I've already dug into in lieu of, and I've reached the conclusion that any law review article you write on in lieu of is going to be very small and indecisive.
Yeah, and you know what, Charles, I think that's, you know, worth kicking around, because there's another little axiom in constitutional and Supreme Court law when it comes to taxes, and that is that the tax laws as written by Congress are supposed to be defined and looked at in favor of the citizen, being in favor of the citizen when they interpret it, and against the government. So it's not a code for expansive use of terms. It's a code to limit the use of these terms and to be damn sure that they're defining them very narrowly.
And do we has anybody looked into whether the first time this phrase in lieu of was used, if there's anything in the congressional record, or what was it called before the congressional record? Somebody here's got to remember it.
Congressional. Before 1871, it was, I forgot what it was, Charles.
Okay, doesn't really matter, but.
But I mean, but hey, for the period of time we're talking about, that in lieu of, the congressional record was in effect from 1964.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, but your basic argument is that in this context, in lieu of means something less than replacement.
Well, no, you can take into consideration repeal provisions, but the point I do want to make is this. Whatever pattern you have, say like the 1926 Act, that pattern is still the pattern in 1928. And in fact, the pattern in the old stuff is continued forward, the same subjects.
Isn't it also, I mean, that pattern is informing us because in the real, you know, 54 and 86 codes, they've lifted out a lot of detail and specifics.
Let me give you an example. Tax on foreign-built yachts. I think it was adopted by Congress in 1909. And it goes up before the Supreme Court. The Vanderbilts, all the big yacht owners didn't like having their yachts taxed. The big moguls, the overlords, the captains of industry, like the Vanderbilts, the Rothschilds, and Rockefellers. So they sued to challenge the constitutionality of the tax on foreign-built yachts. Went to the United States Supreme Court. Chief Justice White, in the case dealing with constitutionality of yachts, tax on foreign-built yachts, he makes this amazing statement, and he is so dead right. There's a difference between things domestic and things foreign and their use. Wow! And boy, that's something you need to take into consideration in reference to the income tax. There's a difference between things domestic and things foreign and their use. And that was used as a justification for saying, well, yeah, Congress can tax Americans, the yachts built in Europe of American citizens, even if they're used in Europe. Yeah, it's a valid tax. Now, what do they do with the yacht tax? So after they get it, the Supreme Court approves it. Oh, it's constitutional. Oh, well, now Congress comes out in lieu of. So let's say it's the 1909 tax. And so it's 1912. I don't have it off the top of my head. So the Congress comes along and passes another tax in reference to foreign-built yachts. In lieu of the tax imposed in 1909, there is this tax. And then suddenly, you know, as time goes by, you know, every couple of years, it's always in lieu of. This is one of the little tricks you need to, you know, you need to see, Charles. This doesn't happen with just the income tax. It happens with a lot of these taxes. But, you know, you will see, you know, where in 1909 is taxed on foreign built yachts. Now that sucker, the subject, vanishes off down into the regulations. Ooh, now you need to see you got to see the regulations. Oh, and now, you know, in lieu of that previous tax, there's imposed this tax on boats. But then the subjects, who the subjects are, you don't see that until you look at the regulations. Wow, that's kind of one of those tricks that Congress has pulled. So one of the things that I see in lieu of, it makes it appear to be broader than it really is. And that's the problem with the income tax. And hey, you know, you have problems with the word person. You have problems with the word individual, you know, and most people, you know, I've engaged in a study of the word person throughout the entire United States statutes at large, Charles. Have you?
I done what?
The word person, done a study of the word person. That's something you ought to do. And person is something different from what we think a person is. And a citizen and a person are two different things.
I'm just posting for everybody's benefit a citation that says, in lieu of means mutually exclusionary. It's a low level. It's a district court case. It doesn't mean much. But there've got to be more cases that...
No, Charles, no. The courts will mention, you know, I think sometimes the Supreme Court mentions the fact that things are in lieu of, but nobody litigates it. You know, there isn't any real challenges, nothing of substance. But I invite you, produce a law review article in the next 2 weeks.
I'm not going to try to produce one in the next 2 weeks. I got a lot to do. But
okay.
I came here to get my mind off things that I don't usually think about. So
mission accomplished.
Good for that.
Yeah. Well, Charles, you know, the more eyes on this, the better, as far as I'm concerned. When you're looking at these tax statutes, especially Internal Revenue Code, one of the things I look at it with is a jaundiced eye, because there are limited taxing powers that the federal government has with it comes to direct and indirect taxation, and there's rules that apply. The income tax rules, as they're trying to apply it to the individual citizen of the United States of America, don't jibe with the rules that the federal government are bound by when it comes to imposing direct and indirect taxes. It just doesn't work. And the 16th Amendment didn't fix it. So when you look at the 16th Amendment, you have to keep in mind, and you look at the revenue code and income tax code, you have to keep in mind, what are the rules of taxation for the federal government with direct and indirect taxes? When you get that in your mind and you keep that foremost, you start looking at the income tax and saying, wait a minute, how does this directly taxing me with an income tax by the federal government jive with direct tax subject to the rule of apportionment under the Constitution? It doesn't.
All those are slightly different questions from just...
Well, I'll tell you, they're slightly different questions. You're correct. What I'm saying is that's the background that you have when you take a look at the Internal Revenue Code to say, why are they writing it like this? Well, you know, why are they using these words? Why are they framing it like this? What is it they're trying to look at to cover up? I will say to cover up. Why don't they make it clear and concise, given the Supreme Court says that these tax laws that Congress passes is going to be interpreted against them and in favor of the citizen? Why don't they make this clear cut? They don't.
And there's a whole lot of brainwashing that goes into effect too.
Yeah, there is that too.
Well, I think that was a great summary, Larry, to polish off in that short amount of time. Right. Well, why don't we do the housekeeping for Larry's website, because there's a lot more information where that came from for what he was able to quickly show us. Go to a search engine such as StartPage. Bcraft Briefs is typed into the search box, and that will take you to that. And I've already got it up here, Dixieland Law Journal. For Sean's website. I had trouble getting it before, but I got it finally. SeanO'Connor.org, S-H-A-W-N is how Sean is spelled, and O'Connor is your common spelling. And down here at the bottom is how you can get in touch with Sean. Lots of excellent articles and information. Then for the radio show, if you go to agentfortruth.com and go to live radio show, and I'm just remembering that I didn't put the Zoom link for tonight. Boy, I really dropped the ball. Anyway, live radio show, normally when I've got the ball in my hands, I'm going to put the link here on this page where it's live radio show. And then in the past, past shows are linked. And I'm pretty proud of myself because I have right up to show 91. This is show 92 that we just did tonight. So I literally have archived right up through the last show. Linked the links here. And then, as I say up here in this little announcement, we just crossed the threshold of views where they upped us to a 500 video limit.
Oh.
And I think I was at 250 was the prior threshold. So thanks to your views, we've now jumped into the stratosphere of video archiving. And now I can post up to 500 videos before the next threshold. I'll have to check and see how many views that is to go, if it's 750 or whatever. But we've got a long way to go to meet the 500 ceiling. So really, really happy about that. Thank you for viewing the videos. And it really does help to do those. Even the ones I posted today had a whole bunch of views, right on the same day. And I didn't even announce that I was doing it. So there's some people out there that are checking very frequently. So we really, really appreciate that. I have some information I came across today. I just wanted to share real quickly. And that is, there maybe some people have heard about the book, The Real Anthony Fauci. Well, there's actually a film, a documentary that's just come out, largely based on the book. So if you go to therealanthonyfaucimovie.com, and by the way, I'm just going to put this in the chat so that it's preserved there. But if you go to that website, therealanthonyfaucimovie.com, you can, for the next, I guess if you don't include today, the next 8 days starting tomorrow, you can watch the movie for free. So I would highly recommend that you check that out in the next couple of days and sign up, and you can watch the movie for absolutely free. And then if you really like the movie, of course, then you can spread it to others and they can start recouping some of their costs in making this film. But I haven't watched it yet. I'm really excited. Can't wait to watch it. But I thought I'd just share that that little fact, because we have talked about the COVID scandemic quite a bit in the past. Sean, any last words?
No, it was a good fun night. I've got a lot of information about the income tax I'd like to talk to you guys about next week. Talking about federalism, believe it or not, Charles, and how the income tax, personal income tax affects that, or the income tax in general. And the politicalization and weaponization of the income tax. I think you'll all find it real interesting if we get into it next week.
Awesome. And Larry's on Central Time. He's already gone. So thanks to Larry. Thanks, Charles, for your input. Thanks to all the audience. God bless you all. Please keep our country in your prayers. Ask the Lord for mercy on our country. And we'll see you all next time. Take care.
Good night. Good night, everyone.